Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, Paul Dennett here. Just letting you know that Cricket Unfiltered is now on Patreon. If you are a fan of our show and would like to support us with a few dollars each month, go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered or click the link in the show notes on your podcast app.
Menas here. Our Patreon supporters will also get some pretty cool bonus content. Paul will be doing a series of cricket history podcasts.
And Menas will be doing long-form interviews with leading cricket personalities.
All of these shows, plus other bonus features, will be available exclusively to our Patreon supporters.
So if you want some great extra content, or if you just love the show and would like to help support us financially, please go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered.
Ben Stokes will be playing in the Ashes. Just your reaction to that. Were you expecting him to play?
Honestly, hadn't given any real thought to it, but I think it's great that he's now available. Obviously, their summer he missed. I think all the cricket there with some mental health stuff going on. So, anytime someone comes back from that, it's a great thing. And yeah, we love coming up against the best players. So it's great to see him going to be on the plane.
How much more of a dangerous side are they with him in it?
I think any team's more dangerous when you've got someone like Ben Stokes playing. So it certainly adds a lot to their depth. But like I said, we're excited, and I'm glad personally that he's able to be back playing some cricket. So it makes for a really good series.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Andrew Mensel. I'm joined by Paul Dennett. Paul, how are you?
Hey, good, Menas. G'day. It's just wonderful to have the Cricket World Cup on. I knew I was going to enjoy it, but I'm enjoying it even more than I expected. It's been a real thrill so far watching the tournament. T20 cricket, when it actually matters and you actually care about it, is some of the best sporting entertainment in the world.
I would definitely agree. I'm feeling a bit sleepless over the last few days. And joining us again is Jaleesa Apps. Apsy, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm also happy to have the World Cup finally here because I think, as you just said, Paul, it's just a little bit hard to get into T20 cricket when it's a little bit meaningless, but you really get into it when it's a World Cup.
Sure do. And listeners, we are still recording remotely. We were planning to be back in studio for this episode, but a few things have conspired to mean we're going to be on Zoom for this show. So I can wear no pants again, which is a win for me. Do you have pants on, Paul?
Of course. As always, as I said, I'm always in a dinner suit when I record.
Excellent. But it's been a bloody war since the last podcast. I've got a few things to throw at Jaleesa, but I've got so much stick for my Steve Smith take. Everybody's been coming at me, Jay Lenton, everybody. Jaleesa, it's just a constant barrage of Twitter messages. All I'm saying is Shane Warne said the same thing. So it can't be that crazy.
Oh, come on, Menace. It is crazy. And I think the fact that everyone is trying to tell you that it is crazy, I think you're just relishing it. You're just sitting there like a pig in mud. Everyone's so angry and riled up and you're just loving it. We've gone in hook, line and sinker.
Me and Shane Warne are all on our lonesome, you know, the sort of great cricket minds that, you know, think differently. And it's just been everyone's been so mean. There's one listener who thinks I'm only doing this just to argue with Jaleesa. It's some conspiracy theory that I always think.
Fairly true.
That's not true.
That sounds probably pretty true, actually.
Oh, that is such BS. Jaleesa and I are usually on the same page about so many things.
Well, don't lump me in with your bloody unhinged craziness. I'm usually with Paul.
You're usually with Paul. I doubt it. And then you like took things to a new level on the weekend when you started sharing DMs on Twitter, which just, you know, released the hounds again.
I know, that was pretty great. I really enjoyed it. You know what I enjoy most? The number of private messages telling me to overthrow you from the podcast. Like, this podcast started well before I was anywhere near it. And now I'm getting calls to overthrow you from it.
Yeah. The new cast is Paul, Jaleesa and Jay Lenton and the silent editor Menas in the background.
Yeah, our producer Menas.
So that's one thing that's come out.
It happened
of the last
to Steve
show.
Jobs, didn't it? He founded Apple, but eventually got kicked out. Man, it could happen to you.
Oh, it happens to all, you know, successful
visionaries.
Exploits.
Absolutely.
Eventually, their dictator must come down.
Right, now, a couple more things. Firstly, Jaleesa, you went on the radio last Thursday on Joel and Fletch on SEN. You are now none for like 1,000 mentioning the cricket podcast you do. Literally, they bring you on. Usually it's about rugby league. So, okay, you can't really lead off with I'm on a cricket podcast. They start off by talking about you being angry at Warney for not selecting Smith. You don't even mention the podcast. You don't think to say, oh, I was arguing about this on my cricket podcast. You need to get it on air.
No, the funny thing was I actually, in my head, I made a mental note to do that and go, oh, I must mention Menas and how mad he is. And then, you know, we just started talking about other things and, like, all of a sudden I'm changing my phone background to Brett Finch instead of Warney and I just got lost. So, which will make no sense to anyone who didn't hear the actual radio spot, but it's just really, you just get a bit carried away on there. I'm sorry, it's a new medium. I'm learning. I don't know. TV's easy.
Tell the producer I wanted to be you want to be introduced as journalist for Ten Sport and co-host of the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I actually think it adds to your kudos as a cricket pundit if you're doing a cricket podcast. So it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Well, I'm not ashamed of it all. I was in the paper as a prominent cricket podcaster. They didn't mention which podcast, but they mentioned that. So exactly. No, I'm out and proud.
Good. I'm out and I'm proud too. The last thing is on the last show we gave a bit of a serve to the WBBL coverage for not drawing light on some fielding errors. And one of the commentators, Lisa Stelaker, has replied to us on Twitter and basically said we must have missed her criticizing the fielding. And I just want to say, as a Fox Sports subscriber, when you're watching on the weekend, you get a weird hybrid of the coverage. So you get the Channel 7 commentators, but then they cross to the Fox studio. So maybe we missed Lisa going in on the bad fielding. So I just want to put that correction out there that what we saw didn't draw attention to the fielding, but maybe it did happen on Channel 7, but not what we saw.
No, so I think I mentioned in the podcast that I was watching the Fox coverage because I was at work. So Fox is sort of there on the TV next to us all the time. And so I was watching the Fox coverage and I didn't hear Lisa. And what I was sort of pointing out more was that what annoyed me is they didn't turn around a replay really quickly so that the commentators could talk to it. You know, that was sort of more of a production thing. And I sort of understand why they were a bit, you know, dubious about how to handle it. Like they were like, oh, do we, you know, make do we make it this really obvious that this was really bad, or should we just let it go? I sort of get it, and it's really hard on a live broadcast to make that decision really quickly. But I didn't hear what Lisa said, but I do really like Lisa Stelaker as a commentator, so I have no doubt that her commentary was great on it.
I agree. So that's the correction to the record. All righty, let's get into the cricket headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. Right again, Menas. I said it on the last show.
Ben
Stokes is coming. Confirmed. The machine that is Ben Stokes will be coming to the Ashes. And I think that probably pushes England much closer to Australia in all areas. Paul, you must have been thrilled when you heard the news as a cricket lover.
Definitely, yeah, for sure. It really adds that that real mainstream excitement, especially in England, that I think I said it last show, that he's the one cricketer that cuts through even more than Joe Root and Jimmy Anderson. He resonates with the average sporting fan in England in a way that usually only footballers and rugby players do. So to have him on board is going to just mean that much more coverage from the in England. And, of course, he's a wonderful player, so it does mean that England have a much better chance. I mean, he's a wonderful player, but he's not he's not Keith Miller or Imran Khan, or you know, he's very good. He's not I don't think he's at the level of a great, and I think maybe his performance at Headingley was great, and he's done other great things, but his overall record is indicative of a very good player, not a great one.
I just like him because he's a fighter, and I think England will need fighters down here. And some interesting reports that came out of the UK overnight that Stokes was probably ready to make this call a couple of weeks ago, but the ECB just wanted to give him a bit more time to stabilise before they announced that he was coming on the Ashes. So clearly this has sort of been in the works for a while. It was pretty obvious if you'd been sort of following the media stories. And I think it gives England a much better chance. The point has been made that he just brings balance to the team. That extra bowling option means when England are selecting teams, they can either go for a spinner or go for the extra quick. And it'll just make a big difference to the way they approach the series.
You're not wrong, Menas. I think this was sort of something that everyone was kind of anticipating happening, because he'd been putting those sort of teasers out on social media as well of him batting, and you sort of, I don't imagine you do that if you don't know that everyone's going to be talking about it and you've already made your mind up that you're coming. And I was out at Nathan Lyon last week, out at his press conference, and he had absolutely no doubt in his mind that Stokes was coming. He was not even slightly like, oh, I hope to see him there. He said, he'll be there. I'm glad he'll be there. It was really affirmative from here. But the ECB, you're right, probably took a bit of a conservative approach, because a few weeks ago, Chris Silverwood was speaking on a press conference, the coach, and he said, well, no, I'm not going to pressure him. I'm not going to be drawn into it. He just would not comment at all, and just said, when he's ready, he's ready. And everyone was like, oh, you know, but is there a spot for him if he's ready? And he said, I'm not going to comment. He just would not put any kind of pressure on him, which probably makes it a little easier to come back into the side when you know that you're doing everything on your own terms.
Yeah, especially when mental health is an issue, you can't put any pressure. I think this pushes the two teams closer together. And I'm saying two all. That's my call, early call on Ashes result. Same as 2019.
I'll have to come back to that.
I definitely think that England are being wildly underestimated. And I was surprised at the reaction to Stokes. I knew that everyone would be pleased to see him, both Australian and English fans, to see him play the Ashes. But I was surprised about everyone really saying, okay, now England can, you know, push Australia. I actually thought England can push us before then. And I know that they're out of a bit of form, but the thing that I find crazy is everyone's like, oh, you know, England, they're out of form, they're out of touch, blah, blah, blah. Well, what form are we in? We don't know. No one's played any red ball cricket. In 2 years, we've played 4 red ball games. We have no clue what kind of form our red ball players are in, except to look at them in T20, which hasn't been great.
That's so right.
I find it quite interesting that everyone has written England off so quickly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be making that mistake. The last test match Australia played, we had half an attack with Cummins and Hazelwood, and Lyon and Stark were ineffective. So,
well, that's right.
So definitely worth watching. But let's move on now to the World Cup, because boy, did Australia get off to an unconvincing start against South Africa. Manners. What was that?
You're such a negative. You're so negative about it. It was a great
no,
win.
No, it was really bad. It was I'm with you on this.
Great
Manners.
Win. It was a really terrible good win. Because it would have been, had we lost, it would have been an absolute bloody disaster. So the fact that they won, albeit wobbling at the end, I don't know. It's just like any time in your life when you're, oh, gosh, you suddenly realize how bad something could be, and then it's not. I just think you have to feel energized and ebullient about it.
Wow. I love your positivity, Paul, because it is infectious, but I see what you're saying, that is it one of those games where if you just squeak through, it can make all the difference in sort of, you know, building momentum or confidence within the camp. But anyway, South Africa batted first. They were restricted to 9 for 118. Mitchell Starc 2 for 32 in 4 overs. Glenn Maxwell opening the bowling 1 for 24, picked up Bavuma in his first over. Josh Hazlewood, it continues his stunning form, 2 for 19 off 4 overs. Pat Cummins, 1 for 17 off 4 overs. Adam Zampa, 2 for 21. Let's start with the team. I like the Aussie team. I think we need 7 batters. I like the 3 quicks. And if you're going to pick a spinner, Zampa's probably the one to start with in the tournament. So I think that balance gives us a good shot. I think when we were in the West Indies and Bangladesh, 6 batters and 5 bowlers, it's just not enough.
It's interesting as to what we're going to do with the games going forward. There's sort of a viewpoint that this was a pretty good side for that first game while the pitches are still hard against South Africa. What are we going to do as the tournament progresses against some of these other sides? There's a feeling that we do need more spinners in there, and that this, you know, it is a very Australian thing to have gone in with our test attack. We've just gone, bugger this. None of this T20 specialization, everything else. We're going in without test bowling. I mean, they should have brought Nathan Lyon over there as well. But
I actually think they should have.
You're probably right. Yeah. I think that, you know, Robert Craddock's banging on about they need to get Mitchell Swepson into the side, and I think he's probably right. I'd like to see him play a part soon.
Robert Craddock, which of your co-hosts had Swepson in his side last week?
It's not all about you, Metters. Every topic doesn't have to be what your take on it was.
No, I've already said it. So chasing 119 to win, Australia got there in the last over. I guess David Warner made 14 off 15 deliveries, so that's probably a success going by his current form. Aaron Finch out for a duck. Mitch Marsh out for 11. Steve Smith, 35 off 34 deliveries. Glenn Maxwell, 18 off 21. But when Smith and Maxwell got out, there was still a massive uphill battle to win the game. And Marcus Stoinis and Matthew Wade did the job, both with a strike rate of 150. Matthew Wade, 15 not out of 10, and Stoinis, 24 not out of 16. Look, it's hard for me to continue criticising Smith when Warner, Finch and Marsh haven't scored many runs, but they just...
Yeah, what was he supposed to do in that situation? How was he supposed to come in and play that menace? Was he supposed to go, oh, cool, well, so we're sitting here on... You know, they're all out for 25. I'll just start flogging around.
Yeah, look, I see your point, Jaleesa, but I still think 35 of 34 is going a bit slow. And we're lucky we won the game. But Glenn Maxwell, 18 off 21, didn't do much better. I just think tactically we actually got this whole chase wrong. I think we were a little bit conservative, and we should have got there with 5 overs to spare, not in the last over.
Your message to me was Smith... And I'm going to say
after this
another word, because I don't want us to end up in a different category on Apple Podcasts. Smith ducked this for us.
Yes, because
what are you talking about?
If you face 34 balls, a strike rate of 102 is just not good enough. I mean, you add 5 or 10 runs to that.
But who else do you want? Because that strike rate is better than 93 Warner, who got 14, Finch, none, Mitch Marsh, 64 strike rate, Glenn Maxwell, 85 strike rate. What do you, and he was the one that ducked it for us.
Exactly. He was the top scorer with the third best strike rate. He won us the game. I mean, he wasn't the only one who won us the game, but it was an innings that was a major contributor to us winning the match. It was the right innings for the time. And he's a little bit unlucky when he got out. It was a freakish catch that got him out. I think he played perfectly. And I think that if you'd had your way and someone else in the side other than him, we probably would have lost that game.
Would have, yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm not going to keep arguing because the three above him aren't.
So you're saying Rads. Drop Smith?
No, I'm not saying drop Smith now. All I'm saying is,
okay, we're not dropping Smith.
If he
now.
Keeps batting at a strike rate of 102, we're not going to win anything.
No, but when you're chasing such a small total, that was the right way to play. But anyway, mm-hmm. I should say how delighted I was with Stoinis and Wade. Mm, I have had same. No faith in them. I have been banging on and on and on and on about them. And when they came out together, I thought, oh God, here we go. We're going to lose this. So it was just really, really satisfying to see them both play so well. You know, it's only two small innings, but they both looked good and they got the job done at very impressive strike rates. Yeah, I think that was the most delightful thing to come out of the game, the performance of those two. I was rapt for them. I was delighted.
Yeah, I thought Stoinis's timing of when he really decided, all right, I've got to really kick this up now, was just perfect. I think Wade was a good partner for him, but I feel like Stoinis really saved that.
So, look, a squeaky win for the Aussies, but they get the points, and it would have been an unmitigated disaster if they'd failed to chase that down. So glad they did. Paul, you've made a very good point about Australia's group. So with the round one completed, it means Australia now have Bangladesh and Sri Lanka joining the West Indies, England and South Africa in the group. Have I missed one there, Paul? No, I think that's it. That's six. It's going to be tough for Australia from here. We're going to be playing, you know, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, who both play pretty well in these conditions. And then we've got England and the West Indies. It's a very tough run in for the Aussies.
It certainly is. The only positive is that it might mean that everyone's sort of been saying, oh, this is the format is such that you can possibly afford to lose one match and that's it. If there's such a high standard of teams throughout the group, they might snipe away at each other and actually Australia might be able to afford to not win quite as many games as we thought we needed to in order to progress. You know, in theory, we could lose to England and the West Indies and still go through if we win the other games, which would be, you know, maybe wouldn't have been possible if Namibia and Scotland had been in our group.
Yeah, we certainly got the worst of the draw. Do you think Finch is going to survive this tournament?
If I had to guess, I'd say yes, just because they'll be very reluctant to drop him. And I mean, he's a good player. There's, and probably also all he needs to ensure his spot in the side is one decent innings or as long as Australia is still winning. But if he continues to fail and if Australia, you know, is suddenly faced with a kind of a must win game, then maybe they would take that, then they maybe would act. So it's certainly possible that he won't, but I think that overwhelmingly, it's more likely that it will.
I wouldn't put past Finch to drop himself.
Agree.
Feeling like he's not going to find form. And he's been out of form for a very long time. Like, it's not just been recent T20s. I mean, he was terrible in the Big Bash last year. It's, you know, unfortunately sort of been on a real downward slide for him. So I wouldn't be surprised if he actually made the call himself. Maybe this game, maybe the next game if he doesn't fire. So,
that's
yeah.
a huge but, call.
Yeah, it is, but it's very selfless and it's a, you know, drop before you dropped, I would.
And they'd probably then look at bringing Matthew Wade up the order and bring Inglis in the middle, which yes. I think would be a good solution.
Oh, you want to open with Smith, don't you? You want him either the drop to opening.
Yep, he could open instead of Finch, absolutely, and bring in Inglis to the middle order.
I'd love Inglis to be in there as well. And I think I think they probably will all get a go at some point during the tournament. I think Agar, although he's a little bit unfashionable maybe, I think he's a pretty good T20 cricketer. I think he'll do well as well.
He's Australia's highest-ranked T20 bowler, and we didn't pick him in the first game.
Mm.
It's a good selection because they got the win. Some other highlights so far from the tournament, I guess starting with Saturday night's second game, was it England versus the West Indies. The West Indies bowled out for around 50. It was an incredibly bad performance. And it just sort of shows their attitude that they just kept swinging. No matter how many wickets were falling, Like Russell and Pollard are in there and they like were 5 for 20. And I thought they could be all out for 40 or they could make 250.
That's the thing on these surfaces. When the spinners start to get the ball to bite, if you're coming out new, you know, wickets can fall in clumps very, very quickly. The same thing happened to Scotland last night against Afghanistan, that the spinners just came on and they're just unplayable for a few balls. And then that was it. The game was done.
How good is Mohammad Shahzad from Afghanistan? They are a team to watch. They are loaded with spinners. They're big hitters. I think they could surprise a few people in this tournament. Terrific, terrific effort against Scotland. What they made almost 200 and then bowled them out for 60, one of the biggest victories in this format of the game. So I think they're someone to keep an eye on.
A lot of composure as well. They showed that they could have actually scored more, I think, that they in those sort of 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 overs, they went along at a decent but not too much of an extravagant clip. And I think that was kind of them knowing that 180, 190 was going to be enough and there was no need to try to, you know, risk trying to get 220 and end up getting into a bit of a hole. But the other thing that was notable was the power of their sixes. They hit 5 sixes that were virtually 100 metres. And I've never seen anything like that before. That was the fifth biggest six was 97 metres. Any other time, that would be the biggest six in a game, but it was only the fifth biggest. They were really giving the ball some tap.
Yeah, Hazratullah Zazai, 44 off 30. Rahmanullah Gurbaz, 46 off 37.
Zadran, he was the one that started very slowly, and he started to accelerate right at the end.
I think it's Zadran who ended up 59 off 34 deliveries. They are a team to watch, and they're spinners. So you've got Muhammad Nabi opened the bowling, then you got Mujibur Rahman 5 for 20, Rashid Khan 4 for 9. It's just a very formidable lineup. And I think if Afghanistan played Australia, I'd be backing Afghanistan probably 5 out of 6 times.
I wouldn't go 5 out of 6, but I would certainly say that if they were playing Australia, I think it would be a 50-50 call as to who would win, which is a remarkable achievement for Afghanistan, given that a generation ago, cricket wasn't even that a popular sport in their country.
Right, and the next bit of news from the World Cup was the absolute spanking that Pakistan handed India, a 10-wicket victory, Pakistan's first ever victory over India in an ICC World Cup event. I was at the first match they ever played, which was in the 92 World Cup, at the SCG, and it was a strange, strange match. Salim Malik batted very peculiarly, and you can read into that what you want, but India got the win then, and Pakistan have never been able to beat them. Does this sort of change your view of Pakistan for the rest of the tournament?
I always thought they were going to be competitive, given the warm-up matches that they'd played and how they played against India and that. I think they're definitely going to be a competitive side.
Yeah, I mean, there are people saying that they now should really be considered favourites, and I can see why they're saying that. I love this game. I love it whenever India play Pakistan, the fact that it just puts cricket onto the truly global stage, which doesn't happen very often, but it really did reverberate around the world, this result. And, you know, I was pleased for Pakistan. The tough times they've endured without having any cricket in their home country for all these years, it was nice to see them to get a win. And as people are saying, it was an emphatic win and a win that was kind of different to how Pakistan often play. That it wasn't mercurial or sort of laced with genius. It was just hard-nosed, professional, highly skilled cricket the whole way through.
Yep, terrific effort for them. And I did enjoy the Indian press coverage of it, talking about Virat Kohli as the lone ranger who gave them a hope. But it was a real thrashing. Must have been a party time in Pakistan. Who were the openers for Pakistan?
Rizwan. Babar Azam.
Yeah, that's a great combination. And then you got Fakhar Zaman and Muhammad Hafiz. So I just wanted to say Fakhar Zaman's name. Anyway, got it out. Any other takeaways from the World Cup?
Well, there was one actually, just this is a bit off the field, but there was a clip on, I think you can find anywhere on really the internet of or Twitter, if you just type in Kohli and the post-match presser, where a journalist asked about maybe dropping Sharma.
Yeah.
He was not happy at that question at all. He was like, well, would you? Like, he was really giving it to whoever asked the question. I just felt every bit of my journalism, like, bit of my in my bones just, like, crawl up because it was just so cringeworthy.
But that's probably what the journalist wanted. I mean, unless the journalist was someone who doesn't have anything normally to do with cricket.
Oh, it's sounds a great grab.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was like it certainly got it noticed. So that's what it is these days.
I like sometimes like rugby league coaches like to do that, and I just go, yeah, I would.
Have you two caught the Justin Langer PR tour that's been going on for the last week? He's been interviewed on several platforms, and he said he's humbled with all the feedback and how great everything is and how great the group's getting on. Do you buy it, Jaleesa?
Nah. Nah. If you're coming out and you're doing we are so happy and suddenly we're really happy together and, oh, this has been the best turnaround. It just feels like, oh, feels like there's cracks here. Like if there was a, you know, it feels all a bit rosy, doesn't it?
Someone messaged me after the Pakistan win and said, Matthew Markovitz messaged me and he said, Haydos is already a better coach than JL.
Well, that's what I was saying. That's Haydos's first game as batting coach and his side wins by 10 wickets. Like, he should retire now. You can't get better than that.
Absolutely. I heard Simon Helmott, the Renegades coach, on the radio yesterday, and he didn't have a jab at Hayden, but they said, what do you think of Hayden? And he said, oh, he's never coached anybody ever, and he's now with Pakistan, kind of like, well, he just kind of walked into this job because Ramiz liked him. But I don't think that matters. If you've played international cricket for 20 years, I think you're still going to have some insights.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, got to start somewhere.
For once, I agree with that. Like, normally I object to ex-players just sort of cruising into jobs, but I think being a specialist mentor for batting is a much closer fit to what he did as a skill set than it is, say, for him being a commentator. I think he's a questionable value as a commentator, but I think I could imagine him in the nets with someone, because he used to work on the ball machine all the time, and I think he was very technically minded. I could see him with some of the Pakistani batters giving them real insights as to how to improve their batting. So, I'm fine with his appointment.
How have you two found the commentary so far on the World Cup coverage?
I think Paul's got a bit more to say about that than I do. I found it fine. I have to admit, a lot of the times I watch cricket in general without commentary, just because I'll be doing other things. So I just sort of, or listening to something else or listening to a podcast or listening to whatever, and I'm just watching the game. But I found it fine. And I think Paul doesn't really like Watson. Is that correct?
Oh, no, I don't mind him.
Because I actually have found him fine.
The only thing I object to with Watson is just that some of these players who've done nothing but play cricket their whole lives have clearly not watched a lot of cricket on TV. And I think that they think that they've got fresh insights that no one has thought of before, that had they actually watched more cricket on TV, they'll realise that what they're saying, they're just saying the same things that have been said over and over again, yet saying them in such a way as that just that it's they think that they're new. Mike Hussey's the same. Like, he'll say, he won't just say, you know, Fred Smith wants to score 100 today. He'll say with, oh, I think Fred Smith wants to score 100 today, as if, oh, God, that's a good idea, Huss. We never would have thought of that one, mate. So there's a little bit of that in Watson. But on the whole, yeah, he's all right. My objection, I was going to have it with...
That's calmed down a lot from your group text.
Well, that was just after I was a bit tired.
Watch emotional. It. She'll share it online, Paul. Be careful.
I was tired and emotional after my horse failed to win the Cox Plate.
I wouldn't share that online, Paul. I just do it to Menace because I know he's such an attention seeker that he'd love it.
Attention seeker.
You know that that's true.
BS. Go on. I'm not the one on TV every night. All righty, let's head local now. The WBBL is continuing, and we're recording this sort of in the middle of some games, so it's going to be hard for us to sort of do a granular analysis. But all the teams are pretty close together. Sydney Thunder have played three games and are yet to they've only yet to win one. But as we're recording, they're playing, so maybe that have pulled off a miraculous victory against the Stars. But so far, very tight competition. Unfortunately, on Saturday, we had four washouts on Tasmania. In Tasmania, it was supposed to be four games on the same day, and they were all washed out. The first one got started, but in the last week, we've had a Rachel Priest 100 for the Hurricanes. She smashed 107 off 68 balls against the Stars. Sophie Devine, another Kiwi, 101 off 60 balls with six sixes against the Thunder. That's her third WBBL century. And Darcy Brown took a hat trick against the Heat, was in a losing effort, but still, it was quite a day of WBBL action. But the issue that's kind of struck me and Paul, he sent me a message about this, that I was watching Elise Perry bat against the Renegades for the Sixers, and the Sixers laboured to 4 for 118. Perry, 50 not out of 51 deliveries, and her team lost because they were short. And I'm just a bit concerned that Perry, who's one of Australia's greatest ever players, doesn't seem to comprehend that she needs to up a strike rate.
It's funny because I'd been just doing all of the strike rates and the averages across all the different franchises, and it is notable what a contrast there is in the Sixers, that Elisa Healy, a strike rate of 140, that is just supreme compared to anyone else in the WBBL, averaging 30 as well, if you don't mind. Now, Shefali Verma, because she's only played virtually no games yet in the WBBL, her overall strike rate is 144 across all T20s, but it's not necessarily comparing apples with apples, that. So we'll have to see how she finishes up at the end of this season. Ash Gardner for the Sydney Sixers is quite quick as well, 121. Belise Perry's career strike rate is 104, but with an average of 52. So that's pretty much spot on with that innings that she played the other day. There's a bit of Steve Smith to that, that sometimes that's what you need. If you're chasing a middling total and players are falling around you, you need someone with a class to sort of that test match class. But there are other times when I think you need to put the foot down, and maybe this was an example of that.
Yeah, I just feel with Perry that this is an ongoing problem. So the Sydney Sixers have not made the finals for the last two WBBL seasons. They're a great lineup, and I feel that when you see your captain out there nudging singles and meandering along at a strike rate of around 100, it sets a very bad example for your team, and I don't think it encourages kind of fearless T20 cricket. And the Sixers, I don't think they'll make the finals for a third year in a row. They look to me well short of the other side. Once Healy and Verma are out, you really got Gardner, and that's about it. It just seems to me very thin, and I think Perry's leadership has to be questioned. Alrighty, next bit of cricket news. Australia has lost one of its very talented fast bowlers, with James Pattinson retiring ahead of the Ashes. I really thought Paddo would go around one more year and try and play a test or two against the Poms, but Pattinson's pulled up stumps. And I guess, Jaleesa, were you surprised?
Oh, I think everyone was surprised, that he'd call it right now. It's just, just sort of when you're heading into an Ashes series, and you would have thought, he would want to be one of those fairly in the mix. So I just couldn't quite understand it. But the funny thing was, the only person that seemed not surprised was Victoria coach Chris Rogers. He just seemed to realise that the writing was on the wall a little while ago. He said that he'd been like a caged lion in lockdown, having to train inside and getting through winter. He just didn't seem himself, and so he sort of saw it coming for a while and didn't seem to have been able to talk him out of it, or even didn't seem to try to talk him out of it. It just seemed like inevitable. But all of his Australia teammates, like talking to Nathan Lyon, like he certainly was very surprised. So perhaps it was just something that Victoria knew, but certainly no one in the media circle, no one in the other teams, the other states, no one seemed to have any inkling that this was going to happen.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation where you're not in the first 11 for Australia, but with COVID, meaning you sort of have to stay in this bubble. Last summer, Paddo didn't get to play much because he was with the test side, whereas you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID, you'll be able to, you know, if you're not picked, you'll be able to fly back and play for Victoria and still get some cricket. So I think there was some frustration from Pattinson that he was fit again, but he just wasn't bowling. I think he sort of figured, well, I'd rather be playing for Victoria than be 12th man for Australia all the time.
Yes.
So I sort of get that. And I also think that he could make some really good money playing in the T20 tournaments around the world. He bowled well for, I think, Mumbai Indians in the IPL last year. So I think he'll be he'll be able to really get some good contracts and set himself up for retirement. And he deserves it. He's been a fantastic servant, blighted by injury, but when in form, one of the most electric fast bowlers in Australian cricket.
Absolutely. And if he does get his body right and does have a, you know, 3 or 4 years assault on the T20 leagues, just bowling four overs at flat out, and he can hit the ball as well. You're right. He could do really well. And I hope he does. The stat that's been circulating, it's not something that I came up with, but if you haven't heard it, it's worth mentioning that he took 81 test wickets at a very good average of 26.3, but his strike rate of 48.9. For bowlers who've taken as many wickets as him or more, that places him third best in Australian history behind Pat Cummins. And in first position is the demon, Fred Spofforth, who put Australian cricket right on the map way back in the 1880s. And there's a statue of him at the SCG. So an obscure little stat, but a nice little trio there.
Ironically, Paddo is one of those fast bowlers who off the field is lovely, gentle, sweet. Whenever New South Wales has played Victoria, he's great to chat to. Get him on the field, he's a madman. He's one of those fast bowlers. You get the red rock in the hand and they lose their mind. But he'll be in action. I think, maybe not he'll be in action this week. I'm not sure. But New South Wales are taking on Victoria in the Sheffield Shield. So finally, the two most important states in Australia get to start their domestic summers, and it represents a huge opportunity for Will Pukowski, who's going to play in the second game, Marcus Harris, Curtis Patterson, Nathan Lyon to sort of tune up for the Ashes. So that starts this week.
Curtis Patterson actually said today that he has still got that desire there to play test cricket, and he feels like last season before that he was coming off a bit of injury, and then last summer he just didn't quite fire, and he said he felt like he actually got caught up thinking about wanting to play for Australia, and now he's got much more of a casual approach. He's married now, he's having a baby, so he might be somebody that ends up sort of pushing for a test selection.
Yeah, I mean, he's not being talked about yet, but one century would change that. And if he happens
funny you said that, Paul, because that's what he said.
They used to always say that any state cricketer was only three double centuries away from being in the Australian side. And so you could parlay that all the way down to someone in fifth grade was only, 15 double centuries away from being in the Australian side.
Not last season, but the season before, Patterson came into the summer in real test contention, and then he did his Achilles, and then he aggravated at Des Moines Oval, and that sort of put him back, and he's never really gained any momentum with the bat since then. But he is a superb player, and I'm sure he'll do well. Oh, well, another snub for the three of us. We weren't given positions as Australian selectors, and our bid for an IPL franchise has been knocked back. They've gone for They've gone for the Lucknow and Ahmedabad franchises that sold for a combined $2.3 billion Aussie dollars at auction. Incredible.
You mean there's not going to be a Borua franchise?
Nope.
Yeah, our bid for $20 just got knocked back.
God's sake. What did you contribute, Paul? Like, come on, we need all up it.
Huge sums of money. I heard our colleague Barrett Sundaresan on the radio before, and you know, he was saying that value is way more than, say, what Newcastle Football Club went for, or it's about five times what Chennai paid for their franchise when they bought it. So it just shows the value of the IPL.
Yeah, well, Paul's got to get on a few more Maltese, clearly.
Quite a few.
You're not even trying, Paul. Come on.
The thing that I liked was that the Glazer family, who own Manchester United, went over there to bid. And that shows how, you know, they're an American family who knows nothing about cricket, and that shows how big time it is. And apparently their bid, it's a sealed process. So theirs was nowhere near big enough. And so, you know, that shows the kind of realm that we're talking about. So it may have some implications for world cricket at the moment. There are 8 teams in the IPL. Each team plays each other twice. That's a total of 56 games. Now that they're going to 10 teams, they could actually go up to 90 games if they were going to keep it as in that format. They're not. They're starting it with 74. But Harsha Bhogle sent out a tweet saying, I must admit I'm blown away by the size of the bids. The cricket economy just gets more buoyant, and I don't see how it can stop at 74 games a year. This is a huge vote of confidence in the Indian consumer's willingness to watch the IPL. So if it does balloon out to 90 games, then that's going to make the tournament even longer. And, you know, as the years go by, the IPL may start to carve out more than just the 2 months that it does now. It could be 3 months, could be 4 months. Who knows where it will end? So it's this seismic change to world cricket just keeps on growing.
Certainly does, and more opportunities for cricketers to earn some good money over there. All right, we're going to take our first and final break of the show. Just a heads up that during this World Cup, myself and maybe Jaleesa and Paul will be joining me on live reaction broadcast. So I broadcast it at 1 a.m. Sunday morning on Twitter and YouTube, my fresh reaction to Australia's unconvincing defeat. So they're going to be
We won. Okay, too bad.
That's how depressed I am about it. Got my facts straight on the broadcast. So follow our YouTube page and head to Twitter. They could be loose, especially if they're like 5 in the morning after an all-nighter. All right, we'll be back with Can't Let It Go. You're listening to Cricket Unfiltered. It's Can't Let It Go time, and we've already let go of Jaleesa Apps, who's had to go because she's got a work commitment. So it's Paul and I bringing the ship home, the original duo. Paul, what's your Can't Let It Go?
I've got a couple, or three actually. One, the scene of Virat Kohli shaking hands warmly with Mohammad Rizwan and Babar Azam after they were victorious. Was a lovely scene. If you haven't seen it, it's really nice. And when you look at the context behind this, that Kohli must have known that he was going to be forever known in India as the captain that lost to Pakistan for the first time ever in a World Cup. He's just been absolutely thrashed and shakes hands with them, sort of pats on the back, borderline hug with a warm smile. I think that, you know, it's one of the nicest things to come out of that game. There were some other things not so nice off the field that sort of occurred on social media and whatever else, but that was really heartening to see. And just a couple of things about, we mentioned earlier about the commentary in the World Cup. I always harken back to what happened with Michael Holding in the 2019 World Cup, where he criticised the umpiring, got an email from the boss having a go at him and said, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. And he then publicised it saying, well, I'm going to stand up for what I believe in. I hope that the commentators that are over there now haven't been similarly instructed, because there were just a couple of instances in the Australian game that I thought were a bit curious. One in particular, men, as you might remember this, I think it was the first shot that Steve Smith scored off. He hit it, and it looked like it had gone for 4. The fielder sort of signalled 4. Pommy and Banger in commentary said, yep, that looks like it's going to be 4. As we freeze it there, we can see that the ball's touching his knee at the same time as it's touching the rope. And then the umpire signaled 3, or failed to signal 4. Smith looked surprised, and the commentators never referred to it again. Alan Wilkins came in and never said another thing about it. Now, it may have just been because there was the changeover and they just sort of got lost. But normally that was an interesting point, and it should have been, okay, let's see exactly why the umpire decided to only give this as 3 and not 4. And there was another one where David Warner copped a waist-high full toss. And he kind of jokingly, or maybe not jokingly, but signaled to the square leg umpire as if to sort of say, can I have some DRS on that? Because I thought it was a waist high full of toss. And unless I missed it, I don't think they scrutinized that either. And neither incident was controversial at all. I'm sure the umpires got it right on both instances. I just hope that this commentary is not so saccharine sweet and sanitized that they've been instructed under no circumstances say anything that is going to be critical towards the umpiring, because that makes it a bit distasteful, I think.
Oh, without doubt, they've been instructed to, I think, go easy on the umpires. There's no doubt. There'd certainly be restrictions on what they can say for these broadcasts, and not just umpiring probably, but yeah.
That's a disgrace then. That's absolutely disgraceful. Like, what the hell is the ICC doing? We're not saying some sort of police state. Like, it's a sporting event. How dare you censor it in that way? That's just repugnant. If that's true, and I think you're probably right, it makes me not want to watch the whole thing, or at least watch it with the sound down. Like, how dare you turn up and insult us viewers by not showing us the real thing because you think we're too stupid to handle a bit of criticism of the umpires, or that we're going to tear them down. That's ridiculous. It's offensive.
I agree it is offensive. And I think decisions should be scrutinized. I do think there is a balance, though, that I think commentators as well as players, at some point you got to accept an umpire's decision, whether it's good or bad. But you certainly scrutinize it. You don't ignore it. I've watched broadcasts in the past where they just bang on about the umpiring, and it does get a bit whiny, but you've got to mention it. You've got to call what's in front of you. It is saying that, though, if you want Paul and I to commentate on an ICC event, we'll say whatever you want.
Absolutely,
literally say whatever you want.
Anything.
If we're being paid. We'll do whatever you want. Oh, great decision. Yeah, yeah. Umpires are fantastic.
Yeah. No, but, these incidents weren't controversial. It would have just been interesting. That's the thing.
I sort of think about when you were talking about Watson before. I do think where you're coming from, though, Paul, is maybe a bit, cricket intimately, whereas I don't know if many viewers do. So I think you're seeing the holes that a lot of people wouldn't see.
No, I don't agree with that. I think that I would imagine an American who's watching it for the first time, some of the ex-players, not to pick Shane Watson, they say things that are so banal and so obvious, yet with such sort of eyes bright and wide in their tone, it's just clear they haven't watched enough of it to have a feel for it. And I think that it would be self-evident to most viewers.
Mm. All right, what's your final can't let it go?
Oh, just the one. Now that I'm on a bit of a rant, I just can't understand why, because I noticed this in the warm-up games, that at one end at Sharjah, the umpire's head is in the way of where the ball will land on a good length, especially to a spinner. And I thought, surely they'll have that fixed for the main tournament, but they haven't. It's like, this is a multi-billion-dollar event, I think. Surely they could have just invested in a little bit of scaffolding.
Yeah, I agree. It reminds me of the Sheffield Shield last year that had a similar thing where you couldn't even see the batter because of the umpire. Yeah, that's crazy. I'm surprised that's allowed to go on.
Yeah,
all righty. My can't let it go. Well, I'm thrilled that this is happening. So a statue has been commissioned for Alan Border that's going to be housed at the Gabba, and it's going to be unveiled later this year. And it started because Ian Botham was interviewed on the Howie Games podcast and said there should be a statue at every ground in Australia. And a businessman was listening and realized they were right. And they've managed to get private funding together to make this beautiful statue of Alan Border. And I think they're doing a redevelopment at the Gabba. So it's going to be unveiled, but then it will be brought back to the Gabba after the redevelopment. I just think this is such a great initiative. I'm very surprised, though, that no one thought of this before, Paul. Like, if anyone deserves a statue, it's Alan Border.
Absolutely. And, like, you know, they got one at King Wally Lewis outside Suncorp Stadium or Lang Park, as they should. They should have one of Alan Border out. Like, you could argue they should have one of Alan Border outside several stadiums in Australia. It's just something that's nice, and that it gives the ground some extra gravitas and some extra feeling of being special. I love the ones that, you know, the MCG, you've got Dennis Lilly, you've got Don Bradman. It's superb. There are plenty in the vicinity of the SCG as well. It's weird that the Gabba doesn't have one. And also, as Robert Craddock pointed out, it's sort of strange that their stands aren't named. I know it's kind of just one big bowl now, but why not go around and name some of those stands after prominent ex-cricketers. So I think that'd be a great thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm so glad he's got a statue. And I was a bit annoyed that it took a Pommy to point that out for us to build a statue. But someone pointed out on Twitter that Border's so humble that he might have been approached in the past and declined it. So We'll just park that. I won't be too angry about this one. All righty, Paul. Well, I'm excited because I've got tomorrow off, so I'm going to be watching World Cup cricket all night. What are you up to?
Yeah, looking forward to it as well. West Indies and South Africa. I think that we'll know a lot more about how our group is shaping up after this game, because if West Indies lose this, they'll certainly be on the edge of being out of the competition. But if they surge back and belt South Africa, then maybe sort of the normal order of favouritism from pre-tournament will start to be restored. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it immensely.
So am I. I'm going to watch some WBBL to warm up. Well, thanks for listening to Cricket Unfiltered. Thanks to Jaleesa Apps. We'll be back next week.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.